ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just before we start, this episode contains some strong language and descriptions of violence.
When our restaurant was firebombed, it was kind of like this puzzle for my 8-year-old brain that didn't quite fit together. And I didn't have all the pieces. I just had these half-remembered scenes. And as I got older, I sort of collected more info, more of these puzzle pieces, and it only came together really slowly. In some ways, I still don't have all the pieces. And it wasn't just like this for me. Other restaurant kids say they've had the same experience. Like, take Josh for example. His dad worked in the kitchen of the Lingnan restaurant, which was attacked a few months after ours. And the thing he remembers most clearly about that time isn't the fear or the racism. It was a kind of game, a roulette game, but with canned food.
So after the fire, obviously the restaurant had to close for repairs, even though it was minor.
Josh's dad had to stay home. And for Josh, who was too young to understand why the restaurant was closed, this was kind of awesome.
Because nowadays he wasn't at the restaurant so much, he would actually be home for dinner. So then he'd start cooking dinner for us again.
The fire had damaged the restaurant and part of the storeroom, and Josh's dad had managed to salvage a bunch of tin cans of food.
Well, we are hoarders by nature. It wasn't a lot, but it's, you know, still better than waste.
But the catch was, they had no idea what was in the cans. Because after the fire, none of them had labels.
Because I thought it got burnt off or washed off by the fire hoses.
Every can was a new surprise.
So, yeah, randomly we'll be like, okay, let's try this tin, see what's in it. It's either going to be fruit salad, corn kernels, tin soup, or something else. So you kind of pot luck as to what you sort of want.
Then one night, when Josh opened a can for dinner, he found something that shouldn't have been there.
I remember it was corn, and so we cracked it open and took the lid off, and just got a big waft of smoke, like freshly burnt, like in a wood fire. It was just this really strong, distinct smell. It's a smell you wouldn't expect to come from canned food. So it kind of brought this experience of sort of joy and happiness and back to why this is all happening. You kind of just snap back to reality in a way.
That smoke smell was Josh's only experience of that fire at the time. His parents tried to shield him from it, just like my parents did with me. In some ways, it worked. In other ways, it sort of backfired. For some of the restaurant kids, like me, because we never spoke about it, it's like we never really processed it properly. And knowing what I know now, I'm not sure that the rest of Australia ever processed it properly either. Because when I look around me today, I can see the same signs of what happened in the 1980s bubbling up. And if we're not careful, if we don't talk about this together, I'm worried something like this could happen again.
People need to know that it hasn't gone away.
The violent anti-lockdown protests created a fertile recruiting ground for extremists.
Neo-Nazis marched in formation.
Yeah, it's all talk. They're all just crazy. They're never going to do something. Until they do something.
I said, I need to go. I need to go because we need to help them.
I can't deal with this again.
That's the first I've ever heard that.
Why do you think it's like so intense? We're still here. We're fucking still living our lives.
This is Firebomb, the latest season of the ABC's Unravel podcast. Episode 7, the final episode, Close to Home. You can see the wokke on that.
That's what I mean. This is like proper, like OG.
Black charness.
Yeah.
It cracks me up that my old family friends Josh and Elaine Chung brought takeaway char kway teow to their interview.
That's our love language, food, you know? Right? That's the whole Cantonese thing, one sick, you know, just to say the greeting is,
We've known each other for as long as I can remember, and we have so much in common. Like me, their dad worked in a Chinese restaurant as they were growing up. And like me, that restaurant was attacked by Jack Van Tongeren and the A&M. But what spins me out is that in all the time that we've known each other, we've never actually talked about what that was like. You know, to have your parents' restaurant attacked by neo-Nazis.
I don't know what kind of sentiment I was feeling, but I do remember it was kind of a scary time as a child. It was a scary time. And I don't know if for you guys, do you remember much coverage on it? I remember the bombings, and maybe you guys were a bit younger then.
I do remember. Definitely there was an awareness of the coverage, but that was particularly more in the 90s, though. During the trials.
Yes.
We've never really talked about what it was like to have our parents remain silent about what happened.
It was just, it burnt. That was it. It wasn't, there was no conversation, there was no explanation. I'm sure your parents are like, we need to go, you know, do whatever we need to do because this has happened.
Yeah.
You know, you'd see the news and you'd be like, oh, everyone hates us. You know, what's going to happen next? Yeah.
In a way, I think this is why this story has stayed with me all this time. It's the dissonance between how my parents see what happened and how I see it. For them, it was about survival, and once they survived and prospered, in some ways, it was over. But for me and some of the other restaurant kids who were born here, I think as we became teenagers and adults, it affected our sense of belonging, our sense of our place in the world.
As an adult, you could probably shake it off easier, but, you know, when you're young, it's quite a scary sort of place to be. I mean, other children being racist too is probably not as bad. It's adults being racist to children, which, yeah.
That experience has made me and the Chungs kind of wary as adults. Like, any time we notice or pick up on the same kind of racist attitudes that led to the extremism of the A&M's hate campaign, it's like alarm bells start ringing or something. We know where this leads. And silence feels dangerous. Because if we stay silent, threats like this can just flourish without scrutiny.
I think it needs to be spoken, because I think a lot of people don't remember it because it didn't really directly involve them.
It's always been there, just that no one's taken note because it's not catching anyone's attention. I think it's quite a right time to have this conversation again to sort of just remind people that it's not that far from flaring up again.
I think people need to know that it hasn't gone away. You know, I guess in my mind it's like, oh, they're gone now, they're in jail, everything's okay, but really it's never gone away. And now around the world, it's on the rise.
Racist attacks towards Asian Australians drew public attention at the start of the pandemic.
I feel scared and really awful.
And then they said that we were the cause of the virus.
In the US and the UK, there were numerous reports of Asian people being punched in the face or attacked. Here in Australia, last year, almost 1 in 5 Chinese Australians report experiencing racist abuse more than 2 years after the pandemic began.
You want to fuck with the fucking hand, yeah? You fucking little Asian dog? Yeah? Yeah? Yeah?